You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up. But that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Eby, as always, in the green room. 1v1, two-man team, David Goss
here. Just
like
here. The old days, dude.
Yeah, man. I feel good about that.
When Doyle's internet would never work, so right. We would just end up bailing.
When he was,
you had your shoes off.
Octagon.
So I just took my shoes
off. Is that okay? Are you okay with me podcasting shoeless here?
I am not, but I got to admit right now,
yeah,
my hygiene's not at an all-time high, so
whoa.
I can't complain about anything for you right now.
What?
Yeah.
What's that mean?
I think I put on the wrong pair of jeans today.
What's that mean?
I had two pairs of jeans sitting on the floor. I took one out, put one down to put on, and I put down the dirty ones.
Okay.
Just they've been
actually,
worn.
Okay, I actually don't want to know.
They've just been worn.
I just really don't want to know. Okay. Look, Bobby Warshaw is out there enjoying his freedom. Same goes for Matt Doyle. Like, he's all about these one-hour massages these days.
Here's the thing.
He's all spoiled.
Do you really think Doyle's enjoying it? Like, the way Doyle's happiness works,
no.
Do you think he's happy?
Actually, he did get a massage the other day. He came in here and he said, I've felt like trash for the last 10 years of my life. This is the first time I've felt salvageable ever. So that's your little sample size of Doyle. You get every single week about 2 hours of his bitterness just kind of mainlined into your headphones, car stereo, whatever it is. You won't get it today.
I would not like to know the car accidents
that we are
guilty for.
We are we're happy. We're enthused. We've got Wayne Rooney rumors that are real to talk about. We're also going to break down Wednesday night action. Of course, some big games there. MLS Cup rematch, Atlanta Sporting Kansas City. Just a tad of controversy there. Atlanta United fans, you have trouble. You have trouble with things that go against your team. I'm just going to say it that way.
Yes.
There's three big games on Soccer Sunday as well we'll look at. Guillermo Berochelotto, maybe back to MLS as a coach, maybe not, maybe pure rumor mill, maybe I still want to talk about it. And today is the day. The MLS Players Union salary dump has happened, so we'll do that in the mailbag. We'll also talk to Nando Vila about Gimlet Media's new podcast, We Came to Win. Of course, they're not talking about the U.S. qualifying for the World Cup, but they're telling all sorts of fascinating stories from around the world ahead of 2018 in Russia. You know what? Let's get on to the big news of the day.
Oh, are we going into some breaking news?
Breaking news in Major League Soccer.
From the BBC.
Wayne Rooney.
Reports from Liverpool.
Set to switch. Massive move for Wayne going to DC United of the MLS.
Guys, we were so entertained by that. Like, I was like, dude, I'm going to play the BBC breaking news.
It was
music.
A lot better when we did it.
Yeah.
Felt a little bit more of a stretch there. But that's the news, man. Stephen Goff, who we trust, who you should trust, at Soccer Insider on Twitter. Washington Post, he's been doing this for a long, long time, since the very beginning in MLS, 1996. He says DC United in, quote, serious talks with 32-year-old Wayne Rooney, currently at Everton. He also updated that today on this Thursday, and he said the sides are close, but no deal is in place because the BBC, Sky Sports, et cetera, The Independent. The BBC have been basically reporting that this thing was done. He says there could be potential resolution in a week or so. And a source of his says it's 50-50 still right now. So if it happened, it sounds like the deal would be through 2020. He would, of course, arrive in the summer window, which opens on July 10th. That's good timing because Audi Field opens on July 14th against the Vancouver Whitecaps. Even better timing for us because Extra Time Live will be at Audi Field to do basically the same thing that we did at Bank of California Stadium.
But better. Because it always gets better.
It always gets better.
So you've got to tune in again. Levy doesn't want it to sound rudimentary.
Right, right. Different bits we will do. Reports out there, which I cannot emphasize the word reports enough, say that this is a £12 million move. That's about $16.5 million in dollars. But it doesn't say whether that's transfer fee and salary, whether that's just transfer fee. Everton fans, of course, are saying, we're going to make a profit on Wayne Rooney, who they purchased for $10 million about a year ago. I highly doubt that this is a $16.5 million transfer fee for 32-year-old Wayne Rooney, who Sam Allardyce basically said was no longer a starter. Don't exactly have the most leverage from a negotiating standpoint there. Goff also said that DC had chased Chicharito, Carlos Tevez, Mario Balotelli, had inquired about Andres Iniesta, but it seems like Wayne Rooney is the name. And you are what?
Upset that they didn't get any of the names you just
what?
Said.
What? Come on. Don't be a David Downer.
Well, Iniesta's Iniesta. Tevez is Tevez. Balotelli's
like
in his prime.
Iniesta is.
Probably. Balotelli's in. Although there's rumors that Iniesta move apparently hasn't been as fluid as it could be, and he's
you don't
now
say.
Available. Balotelli's in his prime, and that's like the big conversation people are having is there's two prongs to this. Is Wayne Rooney a big enough star to be worth it to say production doesn't matter? He could be productive, but he's a huge star that we're bringing in to boost ourselves into a new stadium. And then on the flip side, will he be productive, and is he worth this money?
Yeah, is this a, you know, to go to the cliche, a retirement league move? That's what people might say.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to remind some of those people of the folks that came here around that same age, Thierry Henry, David Villa, Robbie Keane. Just because – and look, I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate
here. Yeah, for
sure. But I am personally excited by this move, and it helps that I have no stakes in the game when it comes to whether or not DC United are good. I like fun soccer, and I like good soccer, and I don't necessarily
– I don't know that Waza is
have
the
a preference on both,
those.
But to me this is just fun from a neutral standpoint, because if it blows up, I'm entertained. If he kills it in a new stadium and helps DC United usher in a new era of excellence or whatever that era might be, I'm entertained.
I think that's part of the problem, though, is the way this league is moving, the way people are spending money in this league currently, this doesn't feel like a propel you to years of success move. This seems like a get people into a new stadium move. And that's the frustration.
But couldn't that propel you into years of success?
Potentially, but then you still need to spend the money on the 20-year-old South American who you're going to build your team around.
What's Lucho Acosta?
Okay.
What's Yamil Assad? What's Ulises Segura?
Okay.
I'm just throwing
so
those
out there
as names
that core is already built for them.
I don't think it's built. I think it's in the process of being built, as is everything at DC United. Because if you look at, and we'll get into this in most players' union, if you look at the numbers, base salary, total comp, whatever it is, if you just look at outlay on players, on talent, on the guys in your squad, DC United, 4 years, thanks to RFK, thanks to a lot of things from the business side, have been at the bottom of that metric as they attempted to get into a stadium, as they built the money to build that stadium, spent the money. They just haven't spent money. So, like, to say, okay, you bring in Wayne Rooney and the rest of it needs to be done and dusted, ready to go, was unrealistic. They have a start. They have a number of young players that I think are pretty good, some players more in their prime, like Steve Birnbaum, that either are good or should be good. They've got some guys that have not yet performed. I'd say Zoltan Stieber is in that category. I would even argue Lucho Acosta is in that category. And then you have a guy like Pauly Arriola who's got to prove it. So to me, if you're DC United, you have got to get your city, your area reinvigorated by who you are as a club, and that you provide something to them. Because you're not providing winning right now. You're not giving them that. So go get somebody who could completely change the complexity of who your team is on the field, and we'll certainly do that in the stands and outside. Now, I'm not saying people are going to come into the stadium and chant Rooney, though they might.
They probably will, and they'll probably all be wearing a Man U jersey.
Well, that may be the first time they stepped in your stadium.
Well, it'll be everyone's first time.
That's also a good point. An even better point that you just made. I'm just saying it captures the attention of people that aren't currently paying attention to you.
Some of what you're saying is true, right?
And why couldn't he be good? Why couldn't he be good?
Okay, so it will make a splash. But from a playing point of view, and I understand levels change, he has fallen off extremely hard year to year over the last, you could say, 3 years. Some people would potentially say longer. Like falling off a cliff. And everyone's body is
complete. But that's like falling off Everest. This is a dude that is the all-time goals assist guy in the Premier League.
But that's based on how many years he played in the Premier League. And yes, he's good. But if Ronaldo had stayed in the Premier League his whole life, he would be that guy. Like Rooney
stayed. And Ronaldo's really good.
And Rooney stayed. people's bodies are different, right? David Villa held up. Robbie Keane held up. Robbie Keane may have had a different mentality when he came over because he wasn't the guy. Beckham was there and he was coming over and he was signed to win. That's what the
Donovan as well.
Explicit
yeah.
case was. Yeah, they had a good team, yeah, but like Keane wasn't signed to be the star guy to get everyone in the stadium, and he ended up being that guy over his time with the LA Galaxy. But Rooney, when you watch him, has fallen off heavily. Now, I understand he's falling off from a higher level.
And also, Allardyce played him in midfield. And then basically didn't play him.
Yeah.
DC United are not going to play Wayne Rooney in midfield.
No, but how much work do they need from a center forward? How much running do they need? Can Rooney do that?
Well, you don't sign him if you need a runner.
So then what is he?
I'm just saying that.
So what is he? Yeah, so you've got Areola on one wing. You've got Assad on one wing. You've got Acosta behind him. You've got pieces that you think are creating chances. You don't really have a great center forward. You have Mullins and Maddox. Obviously, we've talked about that being a position of need for them. But it just seems that it misses the mark to me a little bit on each spot, which is, yeah, he's a huge name historically. But is he a huge personality? Right? Zlatan comes. Everyone's excited. Everyone goes to meet him at the airport. And then the next week, he scores a goal, and he says something, and he's interesting, and he's
And then he's on every single late-night show.
Yes.
And yeah,
I don't know that Rooney's that guy.
I don't think Rooney is that
guy.
Then, I don't think you should expect him to be that guy.
So then is he going to be productive on the field?
Why wouldn't he be able to be productive on the field? Robbie Keane is not physically dominant. David Villa is not physically dominant.
There's a difference between what type of player you are and where your body is at in your point of your career.
Why do we think Wayne Rooney's body is unable
because
to...
Because he's falling apart.
In what sense?
He can't physically do the things he used to do. Now, David Villa has never been physically dominant. That's not his game. He doesn't have to change anything to come to MLS. Yes, leagues are different. Pirlo complained and whatever. There's an example of a guy who fell off, by the way. That wasn't a
he's
very good signing.
He's not playing in midfield.
He's not playing in midfield. Andrea Pirlo. I think Rooney will score goals.
He was like 36. I think Rooney will score goals, too. So then I wonder what you're getting riled up about. If he comes in and he scores goals and he provides big moments,
I think for this
and
amount,
he's a good finisher.
I think for the rumored amount of money, you could have gotten someone who will be better for your franchise long term, more exciting to watch now.
I'm still on the Balotelli train personally.
Yeah.
That one from the entertainment, the fun soccer and the good soccer perspective, and the just I can't tear my eyes away perspective is there. Well, go back to the fee though. That is something that I think has yet to be ironed out. If it is in fact $16.5 million. Fee, I'm with you. That's not a good use of that money. Now, if it's $16.5 million between fee and what you're paying
total
Wayne
outlay.
Rooney
yeah.
through 2020, that's not so bad.
So it's 2.5 seasons plus your transfer fee.
Correct. That's not so bad. I think that's a decent investment. Now, do I think people are going to say, oh, retirement league? Of course they are. That's the crutch. That's the easy cliche to go to. And, you know, I can go horse repeating and – going back and detailing all the different moves that have happened over the last 2 or 3 years that prove that MLS has gotten past that point. But just because we're saying, oh, well, we're past that point, doesn't mean, in my eyes at least, that there isn't value to a player like Wayne Rooney.
But Zlatan is a TAM player.
Yeah, but that was always a red herring, that deal.
Okay,
I don't know why people looked at that and said, well, like everybody of a big – if you're over 30 and you're coming in, you got to take that Zlatan deal. Zlatan is a TAM deal because now he gets to go on all the late night shows and Visa gets their money's worth and he's got all these different, you know, sponsorships that Wayne Rooney's probably not going to get. That's why that worked, because Zlatan, frankly, and his agent are visionaries in that sense to say, you know what? What do you want to do next? You want to be a movie star? Well, let's get you to LA any possible way we can and charm the pants off everybody. Wayne Rooney is not going to go into D.C. and charm the pants off the political establishment. There is not a Hollywood for him to latch onto. There is an easy flight back to London or back to Manchester or back to wherever.
Liverpool.
Yes. Wherever it is, he has his probably mini houses.
So I think when
you're asking, there's a new stadium and there's a new project and there's an opportunity to get paid a lot of money to play soccer in a place that he could, I think, be quite successful.
Listen, I get making a splash. Like, the argument of making this type of signing, you don't have to make to me, especially when you're talking about DC United. When you start talking about the execution and you talk about some of these other things, like, one, you're trying to draw in people who haven't been to your games, right?
Right.
He has the Manchester United portion of it. He's famous, but he's not Spanish-speaking. That's a large part of your population that he's not going to help you reach, potentially. He's not from, you know, an African country where you have a huge subset of people in that area who maybe you're trying to draw in for the first time. There isn't like a British expat that you're getting. You're getting Man U fans.
A lot of folks are Man U fans.
A lot of folks are Man U fans.
From all those same places.
Yes. That's your gamble on this one, right?
Right.
Your gamble is that this is big enough. And he has been promoted his whole career, one, because of his success, and two, because he was the best British player for a long time. And the best English player gets promoted by whether it's by shoe deals and jersey deals, commercials, whatever it is. So he's been in that conversation his whole career. He was never of the quality of the top five or six guys, but he's been in that conversation his whole career.
Now, I don't think he makes him a playoff team.
So this is the thing. Does anyone? The way the schedule works out for them, the way this is going to pan out.
Not this year.
So then...
So this year is almost
it's
training wheels. It's training wheels in MLS for him, and it's additional time for Dave Casper to go get more pieces.
Because
they do need more pieces.
Yep.
That's not even in doubt. Like, you can add Wayne Rooney and you can be excited about that move, and you still look at that roster and say, you're probably not going to be able to compete in the East the way MLS is going. So to me, this is the start, and more so than like looking at it from a perspective of, because DC hasn't spent money in so long, I'm saying
they got Paul Ariola last year.
Right. You blew your budget on this one guy. To me, this is more of an indication of our budget ability just changed significantly. And not only are we able to go get and attract and pay a Wayne Rooney, well, we have other monies that should and will go to the rest of our squad. Now, that is always the test.
Yeah.
How are you going to spend those monies? Do those monies exist? And will it be enough to compete in an ultra-competitive Eastern Conference?
If they had made a signing, I don't have a name for you right now, but let's say like an Obafemi Martins. Sorry, I got choked up there.
Yeah, you did.
A guy who's going to be super effective on the field.
Just thinking about Oba? Oba and Dempsey?
Just the days.
And one mixtape?
Man, those are the days. Mm-hmm. A guy who comes in, is dominant in this league, has a good resume, but isn't a superstar like that in the world. Would that have made more sense as a signing here?
No. It would make much more sense as the next signing.
Right.
But you just spent hundreds of millions of dollars on a brand new stadium, and you got to get butts in the seats right now. And you got to generate buzz. And your team is not good.
DC United hasn't struggled with attendance. Like, they've been playing in RFK the whole time, and they've still put together some of the best attendances year after year. And then, yes, over the last few years, it's gotten a little bit staler. But there's still an exciting like group to be around. There's still fans in that stadium. Now you're getting a brand new stadium.
More exciting with a Wayne Rooney. More exciting when you prove to your fan base that you're willing to spend money. I know you may want different players. I think the hope is that there are more players coming. Let us know what you think. Wayne Rooney, DC United, is that the right move? Is it the right time? Is somebody better? Do you want Chicharito? Sounds like somebody might get him. We'll see what happens. With that one, 401-206-0MLS is the hot take hotline. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com is the email.
If they get Tevez as well, then it's like, what, the 2011 Manchester United front line? Berbatov on the bench? They could sign Berbatov.
Let's talk Wednesday night before we get to the weekend here. The big match, I think, was ATL Sporting Kansas City. That was a table topper. Also, MLS Cup rematch.
But ATL SKC is the first one set. Is that because Toronto's hurt and limping and –
It's because those two teams are in first place. It's because Atlanta, in large part, have claimed the title right now, at least, of best team in Major League Soccer.
Ooh.
I mean, who else are you going to throw in there?
Yeah.
And then they lose.
NYCFC lost last week, which doesn't help.
For the first time at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, they didn't score two goals. In fact, they scored no goals. 2-0 win for Sporting Kansas City. A lot to talk about here. A lot to break down. Brad Guzan with a red card in the 34th minute. It's a no-doubter.
Brutal.
By the way, if he does this anywhere on the field, it's a red card it's serious foul play. I mean, he absolutely destroys Kyrie Shelton's leg.
This is
where there needs to be. I mean, I feel like with the change in the rules on dog so, if you're a goalkeeper, you've really got to keep in mind your timing as you come out to meet players try to win balls. Because if you dog so in the box and you're going for the ball, it's not a red card.
Yeah,
you did get the penalty, but I would argue that's better.
You also have to understand when it's worthwhile to lose a player. Like you say this to players about handballing the ball off the line, of like understanding the moment and being like, going down one goal doesn't hurt us as bad as going down a man.
Right.
whether they score the PK or not, whether they score from the ensuing play
or not. Especially Atlanta United at home.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially. So that's why
it
was a little.
And I think knows that.
He does. He comes steaming out. The other side of it is Kyrie Shelton has no goals this season.
Yeah.
Take the odds.
Yeah.
The odds are Kyrie Shelton was about not going to round you and score.
He was about to curl that thing off the post well.
Or just like drag it wide and lower his head and run back and continue to be a great hold-up player. Didn't happen that way. He got taken down. It was a red card for Guzan. Eventually, Daniel Schalke would score a goal. Jurso Fernandes would ice it, but there were some other storylines here. A big one for Atlanta fans is Joseph Martinez's goal in the sixth minute. I covered it on Instant Replay. We have a special up on the site right now on YouTube. There's a lot of confusion about this play, and if you didn't watch it, I'll give you the quick breakdown. Basically, Ezequiel Barco cuts in. He's trying to play the run of Hector Villalba on the outside. Eichel Parra's in that gap. Meanwhile, Joseph Martinez is in an offside position, clear offside position, no doubt about it. Basically, right in the middle of the field where you'd expect him to be, setting up for what he hopes is that cross from Villalba, because he wouldn't be offside if not for the fact that Eichel Parra sticks his leg out, stretches, blocks the ball, blocks the pass going to Villalba, and it goes straight to Joseph's foot, and he scores it as Joseph Martinez does. Goal counts for a second. They do the whole goal celebration. Five Stripes faithful are going nutty. And then Mark Geiger goes to the monitor. Video review. He brings it back. He says, look, go check out Rule 11. This is clearly an offside because the fact that Eichel Parra didn't deliberately play the ball. That's the language. Did he deliberately play the ball? If he did, and the ball goes to Joseph Martinez, not offside. The advantage you gain by being in an offside position is moot. We saw this with Teal Bunbury in Sporting Kansas City just 3 weeks ago. Roger Espinoza coming through, clearing the ball straight to Bunbury, goal, despite the fact he was in an offside position. Where do you stand on this one? Because Atlanta United fans are hopping mad about this. The Pool Reporter talked to Mark Geiger. And by talk to, I mean it's the normal scenario where you submit a written question. He submits a written answer right back. He said basically that the defender reached out his foot, planted it, the ball hit his foot. That was the block. Wasn't a deliberate play. So, therefore, offside.
I think when you have these conversations nowadays, there's two questions being asked. What do you think the call was? And do you think it was clear and obvious?
And also, how do you interpret the rule book, by the way, which is the hardest part of all this.
So, the call on the field, if you want to call it deliberate, I would be okay with that. Once it's called, I don't understand how it's clear and obvious to be overturned. So that's where I stand, which is like I'm kind of okay with the call, but I'm not really okay with overturning it because it's an intent question. And I struggle with intent on review.
What if it's a scenario in which the assistant referee, because you now have video review, takes the cautious side
because
of things.
Because
he knows.
We were told that they were not supposed to referee that way.
Correct. I'm just saying, but there's some human nature stuff. And this is a scenario. I don't know this to be a fact in any way. Keeps it down and
because
says.
Because then you can review it rather than kill the player.
Because
before.
Hector Villalba is onside.
Yeah.
And so when it pops back to Joseph Martinez, I plausibly as a referee, an assistant referee, I could look at that and say, for sure, Eichel Parra deliberately played that ball. He saw the pass coming. He tried to block it. He blocked it. It went to the player.
Yeah.
Now, the flip side of that is, and this is where I eventually came out after much soul searching and going through the rule book and talking to a bunch of folks, I think it should be offside. Definitely should be. Because I don't think Eichel Parra had control of the ball. I don't think that this is a scenario in which he was trying to pass it, clear it, and that's how I interpret the word play.
But, sorry, say the sentence again. Make a deliberate play on the ball.
Correct.
So not play the ball, make a play on the ball, which means I'm attempting to intercept this ball.
An opponent who deliberately plays the ball.
Yeah, so that's where we
That's where the interpretation comes in,
because you come into, is he making a intelligent play with the ball, similar to like back pass to a goalie.
Because I don't think he had control over where this is going.
No,
he's stretching out as far as he can.
But he's making an attempt.
Correct, but you're punishing him for stopping a pass to a guy who's in behind and onside. He has to stop that pass or at least attempt to. So he gets punished because he attempts to make the right defensive play while the offside attacking player gets the awarded for that, which just in the spirit of the game and the spirit of, I think, the law.
You can't make it a punishment and doing the right thing. That's not how it works.
It's how it works in my mind right now.
Brad Guzan tried to make the right play and save
a
goal.
Yeah, but he's straight cleated
it. Okay,
dude.
But I'm just saying it's not a punishment thing. It's just the way that the play worked
out. I just don't think you can reward Joseph Martinez for hanging out in the offside position.
I don't think that Aikopara made a purposeful back pass.
Agreed.
But I do think he made an attempt to play the ball, and it accidentally came off him in that direction.
Well, it doesn't matter now, Atlanta fans. 2-0 loss for you. Kevin Kratz versus Tim Melia was one of the underlying storylines of this game, which was super, super entertaining because the entire crowd at Mercedes-Benz knew what was up. They knew Kratz was 3-for-4 on free kicks. They knew this was their opportunity to tie the game. It was 1-0 at the time. He put both of them on frame. Tim Melia saved them both. Tim Melia also had an incredible save on Miguel Almiron at the very end of this one. Sporting Kansas City 2-0 winners. What does it say about Sporting? I don't really think it says much about Atlanta. It's a 10-man loss.
Although
they looked pretty good at times.
I actually thought that they had moments where there was danger that they were sloppy with the ball in Almiron, Joseph. So it doesn't mean anything. It's man down, but like just simple passes or runs that could have opened up the game. What does it say about SKC?
Who are now atop the Supporters Shield standings?
I don't know. Shallowy scores. It's a beautiful goal, but it's 20 out, a one-on-one shot. Like, you're man up, and they weren't really tearing Atlanta apart. That's not maybe their style, but they might need to have that in their back pocket to win a Western Conference. Because the way it's setting up right now, teams are going to look at them as the favorites, and they're going to try and lock the game down. They're not going to go out, and they're not going to attack. And they're not really going to try and play the ball in the back and give SKC easy opportunities to press them into mistakes. So in watching that part, I didn't think they were overwhelmingly impressive. But they got a win in Atlanta.
23 points, Sporting Kansas City. After the game, Peter Vermees said basically he thinks that Atlanta are probably the best team in MLS. Nice little compliment from Peter after 2-0 win. He would do that right after the extension.
That's a good time to do it.
It is. Toronto losing at home, 5 losses. In 2018, they had 5 losses in the league in all of 2017. They've already matched that in, I think, 8 games. That's no good. Seattle, I gave 0 chance of winning this game. No DPs, Nico Ladero and Clint Dempsey out for this one. And yet, the Dancing Bear, Will Bruin, comes. Do we get to call him the Dancing Bear anymore, or do we have to stop?
Why, because he left
Houston? He's not dancing.
Oh. Also, this goal credit goes to Wolf Eichram. Filthy play. To, like, open that up and then play Will Bruin through.
He toroed Michael Bradley.
Yeah.
And then he megged Marky Delgado.
And then he played the through ball.
And by the way, just to throw this out here, Michael Bradley is the center back.
Yeah.
And he is on the sideline challenging for this ball and getting olayed. And then you score because of it. Those are the risks. That's what happens when you don't have any central defenders. Michael Bradley's a great player. Michael Bradley's going to hunt the ball. When you hunt the ball in midfield, you have players behind you. When you hunt the ball at center back, nobody's behind you, and you have a 1v1 between Bruin and Gregory Vanderweil. And Vanderweil almost gets this out of there, but in the end he can't. Osorio gets a goal. Hedwalla Bawana, woo! Even though it was offside, gets his first career MLS goal, and Sounders win. And now they get to go in the post-game press conference and say, everybody doubted us. I raised my hand. Nobody thought these guys without these DPs could do it. They did it, and now they get to go on with a little bit of momentum into Portland.
Question becomes, who's more important for this team? Roman Torres and Chad Marshall, or Clint Dempsey and Nico Lodero? Because Chad Marshall was back for this game. They have 1 goal in Toronto. It's no Jozy Altidore, so it's a weakened Toronto team. They get a center back, though, which Svensson and Kihi said, we've never played center back together, going into the LAFC game. They didn't get a goal against Columbus at home, man up for 75 minutes. Now they go on the road with no Clint Dempsey, and they get to. We have an email about this in the mailbag, which sparked my interest.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. But
by the way, Greg Vanney thought Bawana was offside as well. He came to the press conference with his cell phone with a freeze frame of the moment the pass was released, and he said, Mike Pecky brought papers. I brought my phone. They thought this was offside. Yeah. I thought it was offside too, but I don't think it was reviewable. I think it's way too close. It wasn't clear and obvious.
Yeah.
It's like inches when you go back and freeze frame it.
I agree with you.
I can't blame the referee on the field. I can't blame the VAR for not reviewing it. It is what it is.
Toronto created a bunch of chances the last 15 minutes of this game. Might be a low bar. This is probably the best the Catches looked. I don't know that that's saying much, but they're not playing with a 5-man back line, and they don't have a genuine winger, quote-unquote, out there. Team doesn't give a ton of width. Josie Altidore is not there to just – there was a few moments when Hamilton came in off the bench where it was like, if Josie was there, he's about – he puts that defender on his back. He's run 20 yards now. You're in the box. They have to find a way to get some results now because Josie's going to be out for a little while. Javinko looks good, but they're playing a guy wearing number 9 and a center midfielder at center back. They've got no wingers. They're playing second string guys at fullback. They don't even have Justin Morrow. Like, they're still playing second string guys there. How bad does this get before it gets better?
Yeah, that's the big question right now for Toronto. 5 losses already. I mean, that really does say it all. Comparing 18 to 17, I know part of that is because you basically are playing your USL team when you're going through CCL. But this is going to be a funny year. And
yep.
This is going to be a year where we, I think, really get to see Greg Vanney in a different light. Because last year we got to see him in the light of, we have the best roster in this league. We lost a heartbreaker at home. We have very clear and obvious goals that we're all committed to and we're all rallying around. And every single day, everybody knows what it is that we have to do to reach those objectives.
Now that
and then we did it.
That wasn't easy because
agreed.
He pushed that team harder
agreed.
Than anyone
but it was
had
ever a different
pushed.
Task.
Yes.
And he accomplished that task and he got the requisite praise. And we're all looking at him now as this ascendant coach within MLS. That ascendancy continued to CCL, and then they just got their hearts ripped out. And now they're in a place where they're basically at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. They've lost a bunch of games. They're injury-ridden. They're still talented, but they are just bereft right now from when you look at that like number one starting 11. They have got maybe 4 or 5 of those guys available on any given day. And they got to recover in what is the best conference in the league with teams that looked at them last year and said, you know what, we don't want to happen. Toronto FC to get back to that summit because that's our summit now.
Yeah.
So it'll be an interesting year for them. Chicago Fire found their number 10. Kevin Ellis.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Man.
He's more of a number 9.
I don't know.
He's a
scoring,
true natural
goal
scorer.
He's like a slasher. He's got a little bit of, you know, he's like Nacho Piatti from the right side.
Also, I think they played Austin Collier as their number 10, so that's what I thought you were saying for a second.
No.
And, yeah, they played like 5 draft picks in this game. Credit to them.
2 games, 2 goals for Kevin Ellis, 2 wins for the Chicago Fire. They knock off Montreal 1-0. They basically man-marked Ignacio Piatti out of this one.
And
so beware Montreal Impact because that's going to keep happening.
And they had, like, Montreal had, what, 30-35% possession or something in this game. They really got worked, and Chicago still kind of struggled to create a ton of opportunities. They had, like, a span of 5 minutes in the second half where they created a bunch off a set piece and some dangerous moments, but still front to back from Chicago. It like just doesn't look right.
Yeah, both teams have problems. Columbus 1, Philadelphia 0. I mean, Jesse's already 6 goals in 11 games. Congrats to him. The
we
Union
got something on a mailbag
remained
for him.
Bad. David Akam got yanked in the 59th. It's not going well. Starting to go better for LAFC at home. 2-0 winners against Minnesota. Francisco Calvo said he wants more press. We're going to give him more press as we always do.
Oh, God, that's brutal.
Edward Atuesta has not scored a goal in his professional career before Wednesday night.
Yeah.
He's a 20-year-old defensive midfielder, and he shimmy-shaked your captain and TAM center back and World Cup participant out of his shoes and scored basically from the penalty spot. Latif Blessing is listed at a generous 5'5". He beasted.
What's Calvo listed at 6'1"?
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
he beasted Calvo on just a 50-50 header in the box.
Beast is not the word. Calvo didn't even jump.
That's true.
Calvo didn't even challenge the ball.
He watched.
Yeah, he watched. He
so did Michael Boxall, by the way, as Mark Anthony Kay ghosted and scored. So you just lost on goals from Edward Atuesta and Mark Anthony Kay
on a headed assist by Latif Blessing.
You got to ask some questions about your defending.
Yeah.
Which we've asked basically everyone that can be asked at this point. Congrats to LAFC.
You also have a team in Minnesota where, like, we haven't always understood how they're building this team. But the one thing they've had is, like, 7 center forwards. And they start Darwin Quintero at center forward. They don't have a center forward for this game. Like, you have Christian Ramirez, and then you draft Abu Dhanlady, and then you draft Mason Toy. And we're like, what are they doing at number 9? And then,
well, you start throwing elbows, you get red cards, you have injuries.
It's just, it seems to get worse. Even when after they get a win, it seems to get worse sometimes.
Yeah, right as we're, this is the Minnesota United in a nutshell, basically. Right as we're on the precipice of being like, you know what? We might have to talk about this team as a playoff team.
Yeah.
They go and do that.
For LAFC, these types of games of like, you finally rotate a little bit your lineup, to get 3 points is just huge. Because of the start that they had, they can just – it doesn't matter how they get them. They can just get 3 points here and there and be good. I thought it was – I understand we just trashed on Minnesota's defense, so it's not the overwhelming thing, but I thought Vela and Rossi looked good filling in as the center forward. Because I thought they swapped that role a little bit. I thought they pulled the back line. And one of the things that we saw in the beginning of the season was when they come off the wing, they cross each other very well. And one will lay it off for the other and things like that. They can do that at center forward as well. So, like, Vela would push the line into the 18 and then lays it off for Rossi to come in. Now if they can get someone to try and crash on the other side, Latif could be that player. Lee Wynn might be that player to just give you that third option to open up the defense. They can still be dangerous.
Adama Diamande coming in. We saw the MLS Players Union numbers come out today. We'll hit that in the mailbag. He's making right around a mil. This is a guy that had a tremendous success with Bob Bradley at Stabæk in Norway and parlayed that into a move to Hull City, a big money move for that club, which I'm sure set them up for a long time. They made this signing for a reason. They think he's going to work on both sides of the ball. I mean, I'd be shocked if he is not their starting forward going forward the rest of the year. I know Aranha's been great.
Well, Aranha's out, what, 4 weeks?
4 weeks until they reevaluate, I
and
believe.
And then if he's healthy, going to the World Cup. So he's out.
Yep, they
probably
needed this regardless.
Until mid-July.
Right.
So he's the starting forward, whether he deserves it or not, for the next 2 months. That's a pretty good runway to give a guy to, say, earn that job.
LAFC in action, 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Sunday.
I silenced you with that.
I know.
That.
Hosting New York City FC, FS1, Fox Sports Go, MLS Live on DAZN, and Fox Deportes. That's the final of three great games on this day. Portland Timbers, Seattle Sounders get it started at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. At 6 p.m., it's Orlando City, Atlanta United on FS1 and TSN. This is the 100th game between Portland and Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And Seattle produced, you have to go watch it.
No, Portland.
An embarrassing tweet. No, I'm just kidding. I did get that exactly wrong. Portland produced an incredible mockumentary on Seattle. And Ken Burns retweeted it today. I don't know.
Oh, did he really?
Ken Burns retweeted it today.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Fanboy.
So, every goal that they had, every metric they had for that video, just throw it out. Ken Burns just retweeted you. Neither of these teams have had the 2018 that they would have liked so far. Seattle Sounders crashing out in CCL. All the pressure on Gerth Hargaway in recent weeks over those comments made to me. And then they get a win, but it's just kind of like to stop the bleeding. Portland Timbers struggled, have now won 3 straight.
Yeah.
They get to host this game. Perfect timing for them, especially given they didn't play midweek and the Seattle Sounders went cross-country and came back cross-country. What's an early season rivalry game like this mean? I know it means a lot to obviously the fans involved and the organizations involved, and every time this happens, it's a little bit of just further recognition of what Cascadia was, is, and will become, this hotbed of emotion and stakes. Does it mean anything competitively for these teams right now?
It's what I said to Bobby on Monday coming out of the New York game, which is, for some teams, a team like Toronto's not in there. Maybe a team like Seattle right now isn't, although the way this season has gone, it's a chance to see when things get turned up a notch more, how they react and who they are. Because these games are played at a different speed and a different intensity with a different focus than a normal MLS regular season game. Whether they're going to tell us that all the time or not, whatever cliche Gio Savarese and Brian Schmetzer want to give us this week about one game at a time and it all is the same, that doesn't matter. These games are played at a different speed and a different notch. The MLS playoffs are as well. There's no other way to gauge how a team will react in those situations except for games like this.
If you're Brian Schmetzer and you just won 2-1,
yeah.
How do you manage the
He's definitely playing Lodero, a five-man.
Clint Dempsey. Because Dempsey will be back in this lineup. I have no doubt about that. Nico Lodero's got that toe injury, so he probably will not be back.
And we also don't know how long that is, by the way.
Right.
Because we're talking soccer. Well,
same thing, Marco Aurelio. It almost feels like I got to be right for the World Cup.
Yeah.
I cannot let this thing drag on. So, guys, figure it out while I get my body right.
I think for sure Schmetzer's playing this five-man back line that he played with Svensson and whoever else the other center back is. I don't know if it's Alfaro. Hugged around Marshall, which I like, because I think Chad Marshall yeah, he's more athletically impressive than a Drew Moore, and he's been more of an attacking center back in his career, but he reads the game really well. And so he can be successful in that role, and right now you have a back line that was shipping goals, and you don't have your full complement of defenders. So they were going to stick that way. Dempsey probably comes in for Bawana, and however you choose to align that midfield, you probably make it like a 5-3-1-1, you know, a 5-3-2 with Dempsey floating in underneath Bruin. And he basically
has freedom. You're not stretching anybody.
Yeah, but they're not anyway. I mean, are they? Is Waylon Francis really?
No, but Bawana was the only one that you thought might get him behind, and that's what he did. Bruin
so
feeds him. And
so you think Dempsey instead of Wolf Ikram?
Man, I...
Or Dempsey up top instead of Bruin?
I don't think you can take out Will Bruin right now. Although he's got that heel issue, so maybe there's extenuating circumstance.
Yeah, I think
I'm with you. It's probably Bawana off the bench, but this just goes back to them having this kind of Achilles heel that just keeps coming back to haunt them. And that was if they lost Jordan Morris, they did not have someone who could replace what he brought. And Victor Rodriguez is not going to replace it.
No.
Wolf Ikram's not going to replace it.
One of the big losses was Jovan Jones. And we talked about it a bit, but combined with Jordan Morris, that really made it killer. Also, Orlando, Atlanta. Like, are we pumped up for that?
Oh, I'm so pumped. Dumb Dwyer is going to do silly things.
He's scoring
in this
a hat trick in this game. They
might
lose.
Dwyer and Leandro Gonzalez Pires, I'm 1,000% here for those guys to just like.
This thing ends 5-4?
I hope and I pray.
I mean,
Paul Christensen's going to be in net. Let's go.
Is that Orlando backline really going to lock down this Atlanta attack?
No. No chance.
This thing's 5-4.
Yeah.
What was it last year? 4-3?
What was the one at Mercedes-Benz?
That you were at.
Yeah.
Where Dempsey, or sorry, Dwyer scored too.
I think it was 4-3 Orlando.
Yeah. So I think this one has that same written all over it. It's going to be fun.
I look at some of the salaries out there, and we're going to talk about this, and Lamine Sané is a guy on big money. Mm-hmm. And we've made jokes about him like living in perpetuity with his arm above his head asking for offside. But at some point, if Orlando City are going to take a step and be convincing on both sides of the ball, he is the guy that has to come good. Based on the outlay, how and what else they've spent, both in trades and on players, how are they going to go improve otherwise?
Well, Spectre is the one that's missing. Spectre was their best defender last year.
Gotta have two of them.
They were a different team when he was in there. Completely different, to the point where he clearly made the guys around him better. Not just his own individual addition to the back line, but he made the guys around him better. But Lamine Sané is supposed to be that guy as well. So I'm not giving him a pass on that, but I'm saying there is an avenue for them to improve if he doesn't steadily improve by himself.
On the field, this is the game I would want to watch. For the pageantry, it's Portland-Seattle, absolutely no doubt. For the emotion, I think it's Orlando City-Atlanta. I just think that these two teams, both of them have the characters to get into it, and it's a free-for-all.
For Orlando, this is a fun game because, like we've said, this is the chance to see them tested. Like I just said, in this high pressure, the game means a little bit more. You're playing the quote-unquote best team in MLS right now. This is everything we've been waiting for from Orlando of how they'll step up in this big moment.
Nando Villa coming up on the other side of the break here. We Came to Win, a new podcast from Gimlet Media. Let us know what you think about the weekend. Anything that we want to talk about on Monday, we'll be right here for you. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I came to win, to fight, to conquer, to thrive. I came to win, to survive.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. We are talking to Nando Villa about Gimlet Media's new podcast, We Came to Win, leading up to the World Cup this summer. Every time I say that, it feels like an additional gut punch just gets harder and harder every single time. Nando, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you guys?
We're doing good. Happy to see that there is at least something positive for U.S. soccer fans in this so far. We got the 1990 World Cup. That was a great moment. I remember reliving that with guys like Peter Vermees back in my days covering Sporting Kansas City. Are you going to give us the gut punch, or is this the initial offering for U.S. fans?
this is the initial offering for U.S. fans. There won't, there will not be a story about the failure to qualify in 2016. But you know what they say, you know, you failed to qualify for the World Cup, but you get a podcast. So, you know, it's unclear which is better.
In the end, you have to think maybe we won.
Right. I think U.S. soccer fans would prefer to have this podcast than to actually play in the World Cup.
For me and Weeby, we looked at the website and there was something called Extra Time.
Yeah.
With Ian McIntosh. It seems like we may be losers in this whole thing.
Right.
Because we
right.
just got ripped off.
I just called my attorney. I'm still waiting for him to get back, but.
Yeah, Weeby doesn't pay, so he doesn't get responses.
My dad's my attorney, just so you know.
Yeah, you know, we're just trying to piggyback on your guys' success as best we can.
So how did all this happen for you and for this show, and what was the vision, Nando? We're five episodes in, and in case people don't know, there's a new one every single Wednesday. I really like it. I'm not a podcast guy, which sounds weird, but this one has captured me
nice.
In a way that others haven't.
He doesn't mean that.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was just last year I got contacted by Matt Nelson, who's a producer here at Gimlet, to see if I'd be interested in possibly hosting a World Cup show. And I was obviously very excited for that. I used to host a soccer show on TV called The Soccer Gods, and I hosted a live nightly recap show in the last World Cup out of Rio de Janeiro, and I was kind of bummed out that I wasn't going to be able to do something for this World Cup, and then, you know, this opportunity just kind of fell out of the sky. So I was very excited about it. I mean, the vision is just to tell great stories of World Cup moments in the past and to really dive deep and do almost like an oral history, audio documentary type thing for some of the moments that a lot of people know and for some other moments that maybe people don't know.
For you personally, because everyone has that, like, I understand you worked one, but the World Cup, like your oldest World Cup memory, your favorite World Cup memory, what's the one that comes out for you?
Well, I'm a Spain. My family's from Spain, so I'm a Spain fan. My oldest World Cup memory is the 1994 World Cup in the U.S. Spain was playing Italy in a knockout game, and Luis Enrique, who coached Barca and now may coach Arsenal next year, got elbowed in the box by Tassotti, and his nose got broken. And I remember just being like, "But he broke his nose. Why is it not a penalty? I don't understand." You know, Spain lost, and it was a very heartbreaking moment for me. But that was my oldest World Cup memory. My best World Cup memory is obviously when Spain won in 2010.
But, yeah, I think that's an easy one.
How do you celebrate that one? I mean, you start, like, that's the best. What makes that the best? Give me some, like, color here. How did you experience
it? I was actually at that World Cup for the group stage, and I went to a few games, so that was really cool. I actually went to the USA-Ghana game that year, which was another painful memory. But I was actually back home in Miami. I was living in Miami at the time when Spain won the final. And I remember just running around outside with a group of friends that I was watching the game with, and I ended up just jumping in the pool fully clothed, like wallet in pocket and phone in pocket. Everything got destroyed. But I didn't care. I was just like, we're just like all jumped in the pool and we're just celebrating like a bunch of idiots.
Not a normal night in Miami?
Yeah, just it's the typical Wednesday. Yeah, Miami, yeah.
Have the rice on hand. Make sure you dry out the cell phone. You have a story on Spain in this as well, but it's on the women's side.
Yeah, it was actually I remember when this happened. It's from the 2015 Women's World Cup. It was actually the first World Cup that the Spanish women qualified for. You know, the men were at the time were very successful. I mean, they had just gotten eliminated in the first round of Brazil, but they won the World Cup in 2010. They won the Euro Cup in 2008 and 2012. So the men's team was very good and had a ton of great players, but the women's team was kind of an afterthought. And when they qualified, everyone in Spain was like, "Oh, look, that's nice. Our women qualified." And then they got knocked out in the first round, and people kind of just shrugged their shoulders and were like, "Okay, whatever." And then the day after, they published an open letter signed by every single member of the team demanding that the coach be fired because of gross incompetence and for essentially sexism. And I remember that thing dropped like a nuclear bomb. It was like everyone was like, whoa, something must have been going down on the inside. But because it was women's soccer, it didn't receive a lot of coverage before that letter dropped. And so this caused a huge media firestorm. The coach did end up getting fired, but the new coach who came in afterwards sort of systematically removed all of the players who were the sort of experienced veterans on the side who kind of led the mutiny, including Vero Boquete, who is the was an MVP of the Women's League here in the U.S. and was one of the best players in the world and certainly the best Spanish player of all time and was still in her prime. She had just played a Champions League final with PSG. So yeah, it's a pretty crazy story. It's the kind of thing that you wouldn't see in the men's side. Just like if a coach had such a bad relationship with some of his top guys, that coach wouldn't last very long. Like the superstars always end up winning out. But on the women's side, this guy had been there for 27 years and had ruled the women's soccer in Spain with an iron fist. Until finally these women sort of got together and did something about it and were able to remove him, but they were also punished. So, yeah.
Incredible story. You're telling a lot of different stories from all over the world. I know the first episode from England, then you have the USA, you talk about Spain and Africa as well. What's been the experience like of just talking to all these characters across the soccer world?
Oh, it's amazing because, you know, we've talked to people from all over the world. And what you see is that, like, everyone brings something different to the game and everyone sees the game slightly different. But there's also, you see consistencies throughout. One of the guys that we talked to for the Maradona episode said something that I thought was very profound. He says that soccer is a factory of hope that renews itself every Sunday, you know. And that feeling that, you know, that people, like, sort of getting their hopes up is something that was universal, that you saw whether it was someone from Africa or someone from the United States or someone from England, wherever, that, you know, that the reason why we kind of love this is because even though it usually 9 times out of 10 crushes our dreams, it's able to sort of bring them back and renew our hope right away. And that I thought was very powerful.
I think that other side, the collective failure or the disappointment, that's also the universal side, right? And it's something that we can all kind of, you know, cloak ourselves in, and we know that well right now in the U.S. But, you know, 1990, I think I was 4 years old, and I was thinking about, as I listened to some of these, who maybe was the person that you guys were most kind of fascinated by, and I came to the conclusion that it has to be Extra Time Radio's soccer grandpa, Bob Gansler. Who's the...
Oh, my God, he's the man. I mean, some of the tape that he gave us was just unbelievable. I mean, he... Just the way he expresses himself, you know, the sort of that sort of like kind of like old school stoic American, you know, solitary man, you know, kind of like him, you know, him kind of facing the world on his own in a sort of quiet strength and full of folksy wisdom. Yeah, it's an amazing story. It really is kind of like a. An old-fashioned, you know, sports Disney movie from like the 90s, you know, ragtag team of guys who no one gave him a chance, and they overcame incredible odds and sort of achieved the impossible. It was a lot of fun to make that story, and I think every time I heard it back, because we here at Gimlet we do multiple rounds of edits on his stories, you know, maybe 10, 12, 15 times. Every single time I heard the story and every single time that Paul Caligiuri's goal flew in against Trinidad and Tobago, I got goosebumps. And I was like, what's wrong with you? You gotta grow up. This is like not normal. But that's what it does. It's just like these inspiring stories, as sappy as they are, they give you goosebumps.
What's the 90s haircut you're going with? If I cast you in this Disney movie, which, you know, we're working through this. We're working through the production process. You going with the mullet, maybe a little flat top? Bowl cut.
You got to go mullet. For this story, you got to go with the mullet. If you look at the pictures from the squad from like 89, 88, about 80% of them had a spectacular mullet. Like, and they had different kinds, you know. At one point, you know, Tony Miola had the no sideburns mullet. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Some of them had more like a Joey Gladstone mullet from Full House. They had all the mullets you could ever imagine, all the different varieties, but they all definitely had one. So I would have to go with one like that.
Which of that cast of characters stood out for you, either in interviews or just in reading the story, that you connected with, or you know, if you were alive, or if you were at this age at that time, you would have been a big fan of?
Well, Bruce Murray is one. He was a forward on the team. You know, I was just – I really liked, like, how honest he was about, like, how terrified he was and how nervous he was. Like, he was, like – you know, like, when the national anthem was playing in Trinidad – he was basically pooping himself, you know, like he wasn't like rah-rah America at the time. He was actually like, oh, my God, I don't belong here. I'm actually really nervous. Like, I'm way in over my head right now. So I appreciated that honesty, because usually, like, you know, after an athlete does achieve something like that and it, you know, it's 30 years later, they remember, they're like, oh, yeah, I was ready to go. He was just completely honest. And he was like, yeah, I was totally not ready for that game.
When you look forward to what's to come, only 5 episodes are out. They've seen the light of day. What are the ones that you really are kind of focused on, excited to see reaction, or would love to just tell people, hey, subscribe to the show because this is what's coming?
Yeah, we do a fun one on the Dos Acero game, the 2002 USA versus Mexico, but we do it from the Mexican perspective. We do kind of like a little twist, kind of like a Letters from Iwo Jima type thing. And it's just like a really nice and kind of soulful kind of look at Mexican soccer and what the Mexican national team means to Mexicans in Mexico, but also in the United States. I'm really excited about that one because, I mean, we hear a lot about the Dos Acero, and obviously it's a pivotal moment in U.S. soccer, maybe the high point of U.S. soccer. But it was also arguably the most traumatic moment in the history of Mexican soccer. You know, they really felt like that was their year to get over the hump, and you know, they qualified first out of the group stage, which included Italy. They were playing really well. They had a bunch of great players. Rafa Márquez was in his prime, you know, Cuauhtémoc Blanco and a bunch of other guys. And, you know, the U.S. didn't scare them at all. So they thought this was their golden opportunity, and then they lost, not just to a team that they thought was inferior, but it was the United States. You know, their neighbors. So, like, that loss really left an imprint in Mexican soccer, and it's something that I think we don't often think about here in the U.S.
When you look forward to this World Cup, 2018 as well, obviously you won't have time to put an episode together, but what's your big storyline? What's interesting you going into this World Cup?
Well, I think that, you know, it's interesting. This World Cup, like, to me, it just doesn't have – it doesn't seem like it has the same level as other World Cups. I mean, there's a lot of big teams missing. You know, Italy's not in, the Netherlands aren't in, Chile's not in, the U.S. isn't in. There's a bunch of big teams that are out, which means that it's kind of like a wide-open World Cup. And to me, I think that the big story will be if Messi's able to win it. Like, will he be able to finally really do the Maradona thing, you know, because Argentina have a ton of problems right now. And, you know, it does seem like there are other strong teams, but it does seem like it's not as competitive as other World Cups. So if he's on his game, can he lift Argentina to win the World Cup and establish himself as, you know, probably the greatest of all time?
All right. So leave us with one last thing, your best Maradona story.
Oh, my God. Well, there's so many. I mean, there's. I'll say if maybe one that that didn't make the episode, but there, you can actually find this video on YouTube. He was playing a friendly match, like some sort of charity match, in the early 90s, and it goes to a penalty shootout, and he takes the final penalty, and he scores and wins the game. And he runs back, and he runs, like, toward the middle of the field to celebrate, and there's a bunch of other guys celebrating with him and a bunch of other, like, you know, people, like, from the, you know, from the team and, you know, from the coaches and people from the stands, whatever. They're, like, all in the field. It's, like, a charity match. It's not a big deal. And one guy clearly puts, like, a bump of cocaine on his hand and offers it to Maradona, and Maradona just sniffs it in the middle of the field.
Oh my God.
I was like, you know what? He kept it real all the time. He did not care at all. And that's Maradona for you.
sometimes a little bit too real, but hey, you got to love the man. Nando Vila, Gimlet Media, We Came to Win, a new podcast out there. 5 episodes in. It comes out every single Wednesday. Go check it out. It's been a, I mean, honestly, it's been a blast to listen to so far. The storytelling is great, and I'm getting pieces from different parts of the world that I honestly did not know in depth. Nando, thank you so much, man, for being the voice of this thing and for joining us today.
Thank you so much, guys.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Time radio driven by Continental into the mailbag 401-206-0MLS. It's a hot take hotline. Call us or text us extratime at MLSsoccer.com. If email is more your thing, the MLS Players Union salary dump is out, and that means we are all on Twitter for basically the entire day. It's how I spent my lunch break combing through all the numbers. What stands out? Well, that defensive outlay is much less than forwards and midfields, which may be one reason why goal scoring is up for the time being. But I also think it's always just kind of a it's a time to judge general managers, technical directors, the people who build the rosters, Dave. Throughout the rest of the year, I think it can be hard sometimes to really understand that back end, and I know that this data is still not complete. Timbers owner Merritt Paulson always comes out and says that. You know, there's more to this picture than meets the eye. But it is at least a starting point for us, and I think it's where you start to say, huh, how come all these guys on the Rapids making TAM money either aren't playing or aren't all that productive? Huh, how come these folks are making this much? How come the production doesn't match? How come Aaron Long is the best value in the league?
So some of this, like Merritt Paulson said, is a little confusing because if you bump a guy up, $25,000, he also goes from non-TAM to TAM, and he hits your cap completely differently,
and
right?
Bonuses, by the way, are another thing that people don't usually think about. If you perform well the season before, there are bonuses built into your contract that now apply in that next year and hit your cap. So that's why a team like Toronto FC, after you have a career year, is like, oh, boy, we've got a whole different cap situation than we thought we might have.
Homegrown players hitting your cap completely differently. Things like that. So this isn't the clearest picture that everyone thinks it is, and everyone freaks out and panics about it. But it does, like you were saying in Seg 1 about Lamina Sané and guys like that, it does put a microscope on some of the guys and say, this is where the front office valued you as a piece of this project. Are you stepping up to that production? Yeah. And you mentioned the Rapids. I mean, there's some guys in there that...
Does your performance match?
Yeah, that aren't getting playing time. And there's some guys in there that you question. Some guys on Atlanta where you're like, how did they get them for this much? You know, all those things like that. And I think Bobby Warshaw said on Twitter, RIP Bobby, even though he's still fine, he's just not here. Someone said, like, did this matter for the players as well? And he's like, for the players are definitely watching it. But what's interesting for them is the new players to the teams, the new players to the league. How much are they making? Because he's like, you kind of know with people – with your friends and with people who have been on the team for a while because of rumors and the way negotiations work and salaries and MLS bump up and stuff like that. But it's the new guys to the league that you end up going out and looking at and saying, oh, that's how they got him to come here.
And you also start to see, you know, what is the total quote-unquote wage bill to steal a line from the BBC? and where does my team fall into it? And so you see teams like DC United at the bottom and teams like Toronto at the top, and you start to try to match where they were in the standings with what they've spent on their clubs, and sometimes it matches, sometimes it doesn't. We're happy to have these conversations. If you have questions, comments, whatever, hit us up. You know how to get at us. I also wanted to throw out Guillermo Barros-Schelotto to MLS, but where? Alfonso Mondello, who works here at Major League Soccer in the player relations department, went out in Argentina and basically said, why not? We want the best of the best. He's on the list. He was close a few years ago, and we'd love to have him come as a coach. I would love him to come as a coach. I wonder what you think might be a good fit for him in this league.
Well, there's no job openings right now.
Correct.
So
let's this is all imaginary because this is all basically just speculation.
Yeah. So you're saying if I look
Where could he do well?
Like, Let's say
Tata Martino takes the U.S. national team job. He could probably do pretty well in Atlanta.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Why not?
I don't think Tata Martino is going to take the U.S. national team job.
Okay, fine.
I think
if that's in my imaginary world.
Because a lot of people are saying that. If that's the type of job he wanted, he would have taken that from the start. He took the Atlanta job for a reason.
Okay.
But, yes, that is an interesting one. Orlando City is another interesting one with the pushing for a South American vibe, although more Brazilian than Argentine, with some good young now talent.
D.C. United might be an interesting one.
Yeah. Quite honestly, if you're asking me, he's a successful coach who's been successful now with different types of projects, right, from Boca Juniors to Lanús. Like, those are different levels of pressure and different levels of outlay compared to the rest of your league. So I think he'd be successful with a number of teams.
Yeah, I don't care. Anywhere. Bring GBS back, por favor. Other news here in MLS. USL, Chicago is coming in Lincoln Yard. Chicago Cubs owner and chairman Tom Ricketts is going to be the majority owner of the team. 20,000-seat stadium on the river, just northwest of the Loop, basically. Great location. There's some speculation right now that this may have MLS implications in the future. But for now, USL getting an amazing new team in the Lincoln Yards in Chicago. So congrats to that league. Congrats to soccer fans in Chicago. More options are always better. What do we have in the mailbag?
Luke from Milwaukee, as a DC fan, I get the excitement in being linked to so many big names after what we've been through. But the reports that DC have been meeting with pretty much everyone is unsettling, and it tells me that they're just looking for a splashy signing to calm fans down for a little bit longer and not actually investing in the longevity of the club. I'd love to get a big name. I'd rather build a winning team. If a big name helps us get there, great. But if it doesn't seem like they're trying to get someone who will fit into this squad, just looking for a name, you can't rely on that in MLS anymore. In parentheses, Ahem Galaxy. In parentheses, just kidding. Give me more Zlatan.
Yeah, he's not wrong. He's not wrong. And I think that was what the point I was trying to make is that I think Wayne Rooney could be a good signing for you from a marketing perspective, from a butts and seats perspective, and most importantly, from an on-the-field perspective. I think that he could do it. There is a chance that he wouldn't. There is a chance that this would blow up in their face. There is a chance that if it is $16.5 million, that could be wasted. And in this era of MLS, that's a massive waste still. It's not just because Ezequiel Barco came for $15 million doesn't mean money grows on trees for clubs.
Also, can I throw one little piece back out there?
Just let me finish real quick.
Yeah.
The secondary piece of that is that better be a part of a bigger plan. That better be a part of a much larger plan within your squad to bring it up to the standards required to compete in 2018, in 2019, in 2020, and beyond.
The other gambles like this recently, and the one that pops out for me is Jermaine Defoe, were sold on when they failed for money. I don't know that Rooney's sellable at this point. Maybe to China.
That's what I was going to say.
But if it's not China, this is a full-in gamble. You're not going to turn this thing back around and say, maybe we lose a million or so, but we can get something back. We can get him somewhere. We could send him to Turkey, whatever it is, right? With some of these signings that MLS teams have made more over the last few years, not early MLS, which was you were getting guys at this age where they weren't going anywhere after. So that's the other piece of this that makes it a risk. Midweek rant here. Watching midweek MLS action and U.S. Open Cup. Let's go Detroit City FC. And congratulations, I think they won on PKs to
they
go
did.
Through to face FC Cincinnati. And finally felt compelled to text. I'm a huge ETR fan, and it's my only must-listen pod the day it's released. We appreciate that. Never miss an episode. Used to be a big Weeby fan until he burned me.
What?
By not responding after meeting him at Sloan Analytics Conference
a
few years ago. But Doyle has been the best contributor, in my opinion. Well, it didn't matter because Doyle was already better than you. So I think he's just using it as an excuse. Always felt smarter as a soccer fan listening to his takes, plus his trolling is A+. That being said, I know Bobby gets a lot of flack online, but after his last few articles, I think he's my favorite contributor. No disrespect to Doyle, 1 and 1A, but I think Bobby needs to feel some love. Bobby's not here, so should I read it anyway? The love?
No. Okay. Save it for Bobby.
So let's move on to this. Here's my question. Is the Portland versus Seattle game this Sunday the least intriguing of the rivalry matchups that day? I think quality-wise, probably, but intensity-wise, will the new Southeast rivalry or cross-country rivalry potentially between NYCFC and
LAFC?
Yeah,
that one's not a rivalry for me. Let's take that right out.
So one question is it behind other rivalries yet? And two, my question in reading this is this the least intense it's been since they've been in MLS?
Oh, man. I have a hard time answering those questions at all because I'm not there. I'm not in the city. I couldn't tell you what it's like to be a Timbers fan gearing up for this. I couldn't tell you what it's like to be a Sounders fan wallowing my own self-misery over a slow start to the season and the fact that my GM said we're not the biggest spender in MLS so far. I just couldn't tell you. I don't have that experience. I think that this game is one that we've kind of taken for granted. And I think that's what a lot of this kind of lack of enthusiasm, lack of excitement from perhaps other people is. I'm still excited. I want to make that clear. I just think that maybe other fans, neutral fans, have gotten to a point where we've seen this so many times in the league and it's been celebrated so many times that there's just a little bit of fatigue right now. And I think once the, whether you're in the stadium or whatever, once the players start walking out, once the day is there, once the buildup happens, once it kind of gets in front of your face and you are reminded of the pageantry and the tradition and the history and the intrigue and the fact that neither of these sides like each other and they really have a great banter between both fan bases and both clubs, to be honest, I think it'll come back. I just think right now it's maybe a little bit of fatigue.
I think that rivalries are made on enemies. Like figurehead people that you despise or that, you know, say these things.
Clint Dempsey is not that?
I think he is.
Okay.
But I think from the Portland side of view, Caleb Porter was the number one guy over the last 2 years because of Valeri's personality. And I don't think there's really Chara, maybe, but I don't think there's anyone else.
Ridgewell's, but he's like the smiling.
Right. And Ridgewell's not relevant right now for the Timbers. So I'm waiting for Savarese's moment because it'll come. Savarese is passionate. He's intense. Like, it'll come. But until that happens, I just think right now there aren't the huge figureheads of the buildup. Like, everyone's clamoring around to get the quote about the other team from that one person. The fans are making their TIFOs against that one person. I think Porter leaving, we've lost that for a minute. But I think Savarese is going to fill that one in pretty quickly. Ben from Philly, what is Sebastian Letou's MLS legacy?
Retired Philly legend, obviously. What do you think? I mean, I'm going back, and he came up with the Sounders, and he had that beginning, and he got to Philly and made a name for himself and really kind of ingratiated with himself with the team and was a consistent goal scorer for a while and chance creator. Bounced around a bit, Caps, Red Bulls, back to Philly.
Yep. A very good MLS player, a very consistent MLS player. I mean, he was a top five guy on his roster most of his career, right?
I almost think it's like his personality that stands out right there with the goal scoring. Like, the reason why you love Sebastian Letou was because he felt like he didn't feel like a big star. He didn't make you feel like, oh, I'm better than everyone. I'm an everyman.
No, the reason.
And my opportunity came, and I came from the French second division. I wasn't getting the chance, and I played lower divisions with the Sounders, and my profile skyrocketed because I was a part of those expansion teams, and I was a little kind of a hometown hero guy. And then the fact that he could be that guy again with the Union, that's what I take away from it. It's just like, he's a guy that you want to be around. He's a guy that if you're a fan, you want to have on your team, both as a player and as a person. And he's also a really good player.
Well, but part of that was his style, which was the, like, I could bike for 5 days and I'll run the entire game, which kept him relevant for a long time because he worked really hard, which goes into what you're saying of he's definitely a fan's player. Anonymous via the Hot Take Hotline. Which city will win MLS Cup sooner, New York or LA? I'm assuming the Red Bulls
New York.
Go in that.
New York. Easy.
Yeah, okay.
It's not a question for me.
Wow.
Although LAFC has an opportunity, I think this year is too early, but if the Western Conference stays down, they have an opportunity to get to MLS Cup, I think, a little bit smoother ride than do the Red Bulls or New York City FC. Plus the Red Bulls, they got a curse following them around. So, there you go. All right, that's from us, 401-206.
Also, you know, Galaxy fans are jumping up and down yelling, we've already won it the record amount of times.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. That was before. This is now in the future. Calm down, Galaxy fans. You know how to hit us up. I won't repeat that for you. Thanks to Nando Villa for joining us. Go check out We Came to Win on Gimlet Media. It's anywhere you can download podcasts. Subscribe to Extra Time Radio if you don't already. Review us, please, por favor, even if you want to, you know, do what some of you do in the Hot Take Hotline and email and just batter us. We'll take it. Thank you to Dave. We'll see you next time.